Thank you, Ken. And hello, Reverend Gloria and everyone in the room, anybody that might be listening on the radio. It's good to be here. As you were reading, Barb, I was noticing some trepidation within myself. My mind was very quiet while you were reading. I was very much enjoying your Paul Farini sharing. And I noticed a fear thought creep in, like, you know, how am I to start my time? And so as I noticed that thought, I simply rested in just being okay with going back to listening, being present with your sharing, Barb. And you ended that sharing with the very idea that Regina had, I feel, meant to get across this morning in her sharing, which is, what do I really want? You know, what do I really want? And just prior to that question was the concept of self-honesty. And I know that one of Michael Langford's keys, maybe even an essential key, is self-honesty. And I thought that was kind of funny, that notion where somebody, oh, I think it was the title of, I hope I'm saying her name correctly, Diana's book. It was a funny title. It's the first time I've heard the title. You know, it kind of that idea that everybody's wrong but me, or I see everybody's sins but mine. You know, that sort of an idea. And it's such a common part of being human beings that we can very much pick out someone else's errors, see someone else's sins, and that's in quotes, of course, see their mistakes, and maybe feel righteous in our positioning of that. And even in Barb's honest sharing about her sister's, quote, worry over Barb's financial condition or state, how easily we can, in those familial relationships, in those conditioned relationships, in those ways that we've reacted for eons, it seems, find ourselves in that same loop of reaction where there's no healing and we're staring in the face of our sister, very much seeing her sin. And it's guised under the term, I'm worried about you. And you know, as human beings, we have somehow accepted that notion of worry as maybe a more benevolent form of fear. Or maybe if someone says, I'm concerned about you. Concern is a form of worry. It's just worded in a maybe a kinder way. And so sometimes it feels to me, and this is just me speaking, that as we're waking up to the truth of who we really are and who this sister might be as well, not who they might be, but who they are in truth as well, these familial conditioning patterns can feel much stronger than, say, in relation to, like, say, a stranger at the grocery store where they may make a comment that doesn't feel quite so impactful in an emotional sort of way. And one of the ways that we have been practicing, at least in the Gentle Healing Group, in open-eyed meditation situations, such as Barb was experiencing with her sister, is that loving all method where, or even our lesson today in A Course in Miracles, in our Gentle Healing Group, is all that I give is given to myself. Or that awareness, a watching awareness watching awareness as well sometimes starts with the practice of eyes open. And we are tuning in to the love within ourselves in those situations. That is the very strength that helps us to move beyond the sometimes habituated reaction or emotions that might arise and seem to cover over the love that is present and there as the foundation and security and anchor that can keep us grounded in a new place, in a new place, in a new space, that space of, maybe unfamiliarity, but we're willing to go there because we recognize that those old spaces have not brought us this lasting peace that, even Regina's sharing this morning pointed towards what she really wanted in all of that external searching was to know that foundation, that love of God, that truth of self, that oneness that is the truth. Yeah. And so each time we find ourselves mistaken in looking external to ourselves and seeing sin somewhere other than our own mind, maybe at a point we can be grateful for that noticing and see that maybe that concern or that I'm worried about you look. We don't have to judge that quite so harshly anymore because we recognize I have also operated from that fear position. And I see that fear position now in this particular situation. And I don't have to embrace it anymore. And one of the ways that I don't embrace that is by not seeing my sister as that either. That is not the truth of my sister. No matter what words are being spoken, no matter how I'm feeling emotionally, the loving all method is about our emotions. Seeing what is arising and recognizing I'm not my emotions. My sister is offering me something here. I can actually be grateful to see this once again. And to recognize I don't have to go to that place once again. I can rest in awareness and ask that awareness, like Barb said, I don't know what to do next. So I rest in quiet, asking that love within, what would you have me say? Where would you have me go? What would you have me do? And be silent. Watching the emotions arise, watching the loop try to snag us back into the loop, as opposed to maybe in your own mind saying, I see you. That's what I do. That's how it comes to me. It's like, I see you. I see what's going on here. And I don't have to buy into it this time. And I can actually bless this brother or this sister or my husband or my dog or, my neighbor or whoever it might be for showing me this part of my mind that wants to see you as enemy, wants to see you as cause, wants to see you as someone to blame, that wants to, reject this opportunity, this healing opportunity. That's really what it is. It's a healing opportunity, but oftentimes our emotions are very intense in those healing opportunities, and we allow ourselves to become those emotions as opposed to stepping aside and seeing the intensity of it, noticing the intensity of it, and saying, oh no, I am not that. I will not be swept down that river of emotion that takes me into a story, starts me, I don't know, making up my own crap. And we are noticing quicker and quicker these days, hopefully. I am, so I'm grateful for that. And with that being said, let that be my prayer as well, that I surrender each time I notice. It's the actual third piece of my aspiration. The aspiration that starts with number one is let me let go of the burden. I will let go. I will let go of the burden of, quote, knowing something. I ask in all things, remembering I do not know. Watch my mind vigilantly. Watch my thoughts vigilantly. Let go of those thoughts that stem from fear and keep only the thoughts of love. Become the empty shell and rest in that divine nature. Let that be my consistent practice. For this I pray. Amen. Okay, thank you. Somebody typed the title, Mistakes Were Made, but not by me. Not by me. I see yours clearly, but not mine. Oh my God. Oh, I have to laugh at myself. Okay, guys, so I am reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul. The subtitle is A Joyful Path to Self-Realization. And it is, we are in chapter one on page 20. We are reading from William Samuel, who has a book that is called A Guide to Awareness and Tranquility. And Michael Langford has compiled this book that I am reading from called Experience Your Perfect Soul, and taken from William Samuel's book, Direct Path Quotes. And that's what I'm sharing with all of you. And so this particular piece is a discussion of the, and this is in quotes, prerequisites to a knowledge of truth. So this section again is a discussion of the prerequisites to a knowledge of truth. So the question is, someone's asking Mr. Samuel a question. Mr. Samuel, why do some people understand the truth so much more rapidly than I do? Is there anyone in this room who hasn't maybe entertained that thought at some time, or still is entertaining that thought? Why do some people get this faster than I do? That notion of comparing ourselves to others, and what we think is their understanding of truth, because we can't really know what their understanding of truth is because we're not them. We still believe in this idea of separation. And that's why this discussion and this title of prerequisites being in quotes, there are no prerequisites to the knowledge of truth. We are truth in truth. But since we don't really accept that fully, There seems to be this discussion, and there seems to be these prerequisites to this full knowledge of truth. And so this person is asking Mr. Samuel, why do some people understand the truth so much more rapidly than I do? And here's the answer. First, let me say, our concern is not with the appearance of others. And that's in italics. It's not about others understanding or not understanding. We are ever concerned with this, and this is in italics. We are ever concerned with this now awareness being I, and all of that is simply hyphenated. There's simply hyphens between now awareness being I, and to me that simply indicates that it's one thing. It's not separated. It's one thing. It's just described with this different set of words, but it all means the same thing. But again, we are ever concerned with this now awareness being I, right here, and that's italic in italics. And this you have seen includes others within it. So let me just read that in its total, because that's the answer to why some people understand the truth so much more rapidly than I do. First, let me say, our concern is not with the appearances of others understanding or not understanding. We are ever concerned with this now awareness being I, right here, and this you have seen includes others within it. Among those who write me or come seeking reality and its peace, it appears that I, quote, get through most quickly, number one, to those who are willing to concede the all of isness. Number two, to those who have come to see, to have, let me start that again. Number two, to those who have come to see that, quote, awareness and, quote, life are the same and will concede that this awareness is alone, total, and all to each of us. And number three, finally, to those who possess an eager willingness to let go the misidentification once it has been pinpointed and exposed. So do you see what he's saying here? So he's saying that he has people that write to him or people that come to him seeking reality, seeking peace. And it appears to him that the people that he gets through to most quickly, the people who get it most quickly, are those that are willing to concede the allness of isness. And that's that all-encompassing aspect that says everyone is included, everyone is included, everyone and everything, and everything I seem to understand, and beyond what I understand. There isn't anything that is excluded, and it's before concepts, before words, everything. So we're willing, we're at least willing, even if we don't understand those words completely, we're willing to concede the allness of isness. Number two, He gets through most quickly to those who have come to see that, quote, awareness and, quote, life are the same, and will concede, there's that word concede again, that this awareness is alone, total, and all to each of us. So again, no exclusion, there's no separation, nobody's left out. And awareness, you know, is it. There's nothing beyond that. It's total, complete. And again, he gets through most quickly and finally to those who possess an eager willingness, and this part is in italics, to let go the misidentification once it has been pinpointed and exposed. So when we, you know, notice ourselves off track, when that, you know, that consistent aspiration to be mindful of what seems to be occurring in thought, and recognizing, is this something that I would keep? Or is this something simply passing through that I am noticing without attachment? Good or bad, ugly or pretty, it simply is. We let go of identifying of that, you know, that persona, Kathy, attaching to something for purposes of serving only Kathy, only small self. Only its, you know, own suffocating construct of beliefs, ideas, opinions, personal preferences, which of course are different than yours. So again, he's saying he gets through most quickly to those who possess an eager willingness to let go of what I just spoke of, that persona. And we have to pinpoint and expose all those ways where we're still attached to that as if it brings us the happiness we think we want, that false happiness that Regina spoke to this morning. You know, where if I can get married, move to Colorado, not have to work, and read the course for the rest of my life, I'm going to be happy. That misidentification. And sometimes it takes those experiences in life that Michael Singer says we generally want to avoid. We have that sinking feeling that, hey, guess what? I don't think he is going to marry me, and I don't think this is going to happen, and I don't think this is going to work out like I want it to work out. And we're so afraid to really hear that, yes, that may in fact be true. We don't even talk about it. We won't even address it. We know the bomb will fall at some point. But we just don't want to, you know, we just don't want to take the bull by the horns and ask, is this going to happen or not happen? So instead, we collude with this misidentified, crazy mind that keeps us in this loop of fear and uncertainty and doesn't really even want to acknowledge that that's going on. And so it busies itself with some other activity, all the while churning and churning and churning in this stew that we make for ourselves. That stew that says, these are the ways that I can be happy. And, you know, sometimes it turns out, but there's still temporary. and Becky just made a post, churning until we are turned into soft butter. Hopefully, yes, that moves us out of that hardened position that says, this is the only way I can be happy. And we really don't want to see that. And that's what this is talking about. We have to pinpoint and expose all those hardened ways. You know, when I often freeze butter. When I buy it at Costco, it comes in, you know, like a big quantities. And so I just freeze what I don't use and pull it out. And frozen butter is like not my thing. I like butter that's soft. So I stick this frozen piece of butter into this thing that I have that sits on the counter, and it has a cover over it. And then you can just let the butter soften to room temperature and use it without worry that it goes rancid. And it's just this wonderfully beautiful, soft butter. And that's what this is asking us to be. Just be that wonderfully beautiful, soft butter, open, spreadable, willing to go with the flow, open our mind, let go of hardened positions. Whether they're in our own families, whether they're in our own working situations, whether they're in our love relationships. I mean, why do we care so much? Why, in a way that I'm talking about where, you know, someone does something, like I'll give you a for instance. It's been hot here in Southern California last couple of days, in the 90s, high 90s. So I have these couple of little trees. One is a peach tree and one is a orange tree. And they're kind of dinky. They're actually dwarf trees to begin with, but they're really tiny right now and they're really cute. And they're very healthy. At the same time, usually once a week, I try to give them like a long drink of water, like maybe at least a gallon or two of water. And so my husband saw me out there with the hose, and he came out and he was like, Kathy, I just watered those the last 2 days in a row. And I could tell it was not what he wanted me to be doing. And so rather than, you know, make a stand somehow and decide that, I'm going to water these anyway, I just said, oh, okay, you know, and shut the hose off and kind of wound it back up and was just noting within my own mind how we so want others to do what we want them to do, even something simple like that. I didn't take that seriously or anything, but I noted just that sense of myself that wants it my way. I want it my way. And I'm going to try to get you, too, to do it my way. And we do that in the simplest of ways as well as complicated ways. And how we can notice that in our own lives just by that, you know, that emotional aspect of it, that pinch of, you know, for me, it shows up in that, you know, you're not the boss of me. Don't tell me what to do. And I've had that since I was a child. Don't tell me what to do. You know, that Catholic grade school little girl that would listen to some sort of a Catholic belief that I knew was not true. Something in my heart said, that's not true. And I wanted to scream it out and say, that's not true. But, you know, of course, that was forbidden. And I was that little kid that would, you know, raise her hand timidly, at the same time have that defiant aspect within my mind that wanted to question what you were saying to me about the Pope being infallible. You know? And I can see differently now that maybe the infallibility that was being spoken about was my very infallibility as well, the truth of who I was. The truth of who I am is infallible. But my small mind didn't know that self. I just saw Pope as another guy just like me, and he could sin too. Yeah. And so there's still that aspect of mind showing up today that you're not the boss of me, that doesn't want to look beyond the error. It still wants to, you know, control and manipulate and try to get things to go my way. And I see them more and more. So I'm grateful to be able to laugh more and more and to let it go. It's like, Jesus, get over yourself. Get over yourself. That is not where your joy is. It is not about serving your way. Yeah. I liked when Michael Singer spoke to the accepting the idea that he came to make, and these are my words, came to make some of his decisions boil down to, is this decision only in service to myself? As Mickey Singer or Michael Singer, the persona of, you know, the human being, Michael Singer, or is this in service to the all? And that's what this was saying in number two. Among those who write me or come seeking reality and its peace, it appears that I get through most quickly, number one, to those who are willing to concede the allness of isness, and this is the one I'm speaking of. Number two, to those who have come to see that awareness and life are the same and will concede that this awareness is alone, total, and all to each of us. And finally, to those who possess an eager willingness to let go the misidentification once it has been pinpointed and exposed. These, it seems, are the simple prerequisites to a speedy discovery of the real identity and the practical peace it is. Really, more than willingness is involved. Positive action to end the activities of the old man is demanded. You know, in that term, old man, I think I understand the way in which it's being used, and I could be mistaken, but this is how it feels to me. And it harkens back to being a human being, you know, being of obsessed of the ego mind, driven only by listening to self-constructed thoughts, beliefs, concepts, and being and living from that. That's what the old man means to me. At the same time, it makes me think of my dad because he used to refer to his father as my old man. And I never liked that. As a child, I just never liked that. It somehow it felt disrespectful to me. And so even today when I hear that terminology in reference to a person, it just is one of those habitual memories that comes into place, and I have to notice and pinpoint that discomfort within myself that has somehow accepted this term old man and seen it as an uncomfortable thing and something to be looked at. So this is talking about more than willingness is involved, that there's some kind of positive action to end the activities of the old man, and that's demanded. There's some action we need to take. So our primary class instruction is to show how, and the how is italicized, how this is done, and to do it. That's the action part of it. Do it. End the activities that, for instance, Michael Langford talks about all the distractions that we do in fact have from practice, from meditation, and I'm going to list, some of my own, which TV watching, for instance. Right now, I know that the French Open tennis is going to be coming up in a couple of weeks, and I very much enjoy watching professional tennis. And so I recognize at the same time that I could watch hours and hours of that. And so I have to ask myself, what are my priorities? And be self-honest. Be self-honest. I could be a person, and this is not my gig, to shop a lot, for instance, and find some sort of satisfaction in shopping, entertaining myself with shopping. And that could be a distraction that, or an activity that takes away from this intense desire for liberation that I say I have, but my action doesn't prove that that's so. Now, if I find myself practicing the loving all method while I am shopping, that's a groovy thing too. Hopefully, that is the case. I know for myself, being self-honest, I am much more likely to be distracted by whatever the activity might be, especially if it's out and about in a like a mall, for instance. Oh my God, I mean, that feels overwhelming to me these days. So I don't do that often, but it just happened to be the case yesterday, and I was noticing just like, wow, seemingly preferring quiet and being home and cutting out the distractions and returning to, the empty mind or less distractive places. So we're being asked to very much do that. At any rate, once again, really, more than willingness is involved. Positive action to end the activities of the old man is demanded. Our primary class instruction is to show how this is done and to do it. So scholarship and I think it's pronounced erudition, and I believe that's how you say it as well. I could be wrong, but I think that's it. And that means intellect. So scholarship and erudition have very little to do with the truth. And lest we are wary, they are more detriment than help. So be on the lookout for The intellect wanting to get involved in trying to figure out what the truth is, or figure out what reality is, or figure out what the absolute is, when we find ourselves lost in intellect, that is an activity that we are being asked to pay attention to and give it up, end that activity. Surrender that. So, determination of the real identity, and that's in quotes, real is in quotes. Determination of the real identity involves a process completely different from the usual time-honored processes of scholarship. And note, time-honored. So right away, we know if they are within time or known within time or understood within time or having been learned in time or considered a process in time or feel usual to us. Those things do not determine what this is, calling our real identity, the truth of who we really are. And it's saying, this process that we're being taken through right now is completely different from, just fill in the blank, everything that I ever thought that I knew. So just don't know anything. Just settle in with I don't know. Ask in all things. That's my third, the third piece of my aspiration. Ask in all things, remembering you don't know. You just don't know. So, going back to this, it says the world's procedure is to heap facts upon facts. I mean, some days I have to say, guys, that I have this overwhelming feeling that I am so over the words. Words, words, words. Whether I'm, it doesn't matter what book I'm reading, I feel over the words. Or trying to, even sometimes in contemplation, I don't even want to repeat what the lesson of the day might be. I simply want to be in awareness, watching awareness, which feels like a nothingness. I don't even know, it just feels like nothing. That's where I want to be, with the nothing. Period. And just stay there. But this using of course, scholarship and intellect. We have this heaping, where we want to heap, the world's procedure is to heap facts upon facts. The student is forever adding to a personal storehouse of information. Usually, the more facts he owns, the greater his battle with the ego. There you go, guys. Usually, the more facts he owns, the greater his battle with the ego. The more invested we are in what we know, the I know mind. And even if we've had direct experiences of that, so what? It says usually the more of that we own, the greater your battle is with the ego. The ego wants to usurp even your spiritual direct experiences. If it's not a permanent way of being, If that's not your your 24/7 experience, that direct experience of divine self, and you're just getting glimpses of that, the ego is going to use that experience and turn it into some kind of, you know, boasting mechanism, some kind of, you know, bragging rights, some sort of, you know, way in which it aggrandizes once again its little self. You know, another piece of information, another heaping of a fact. I had a direct experience of fill in the blank. So occasionally, a new idea comes along that replaces one of his old concepts. But he must take the new idea first and have it firmly in his grip before he lets go of the old. So we kind of do that straddling where, you know, these ideas may feel true, and on some, you know, intellectual level they may seem true, but completely letting go of doubt that they're absolutely true and that there's no reason for any dependence whatsoever on anything you know or presently understand, still feels or may seem like a leap that we're not willing to take from that heap of facts upon facts. And you know, if that's the case, so be it. Rest with what is. We've been told that over and over and over and over again. And divine wisdom of itself is leading the way. And we simply rest, accept, and trust that this completely different process of itself knows what the hay is going on. And we're okay. So again, occasionally a new idea comes along that replaces one of his old concepts. But he must take the new idea first and have it firmly in his grip before he lets go the old. And even A Course in Miracles says, if we're like totally in fear, Jesus can't take the fear from us. We have to have that simple willingness to let it go. I mean, just let it go. Our emotions, our feelings, our sense of self tells us this is uncomfortable. I don't want this anymore. Please take this from me. I am willing to, at least some degree, let this go. And beyond that, I will not use any academic knowledge to help me to understand what is to come. I will be the empty shell. So we loosen the grip. We can loosen the grip. We can let go the old. Nothing but an academic knowledge, and that's in italics, the word academic, nothing but an academic knowledge of the new identity is acquired from these standard processes of education. So it's just another fact upon this heap of facts that we already have. And it doesn't serve us. It doesn't serve to know this self that we say we want. So let us not forget that letting go of intellect is really, you know, that can be a subtle ego preservation strategy that we might pay attention to, each of us, on an individual level. So before a tangible, practical knowledge of the new self is received, and received is in quotes again, because it's not as if we don't already really in truth, absolute truth, have that. But if that's not your direct experience, be self-honest and admit that. That is what this previous page of, letting go of the misidentification and pinpointing and exposing those dishonest aspects of mind that are either ashamed or embarrassed, or I'm too proud to say I'm a screw up, or I'm presenting this picture of a spiritual teacher that is so far beyond my the petty way that I experience myself in my day to day, and faking it to, I don't know, make myself look better or act like I'm, I don't know, whatever. I don't even know. I mean, it's so weird the things we do. We're so weird. I mean, but we need to pinpoint and expose those ways. Those are the misidentifications. Those are the fears that keep us from identifying with this new self that doesn't really have to be received in truth, but seems to be that way. So again, before a tangible, practical knowledge of the new self is, quote, received, we find it an absolute prerequisite to let go the misidentification. We can't keep one piece of that. We cannot straddle a fence. And be comfortable. It just doesn't work that way. Contrary to the ego's many written opinions about it, we find we must let go and stop acting the misidentification entirely, entirely. And that's in italics. So obviously, again, there's that full commitment. It's not about straddling a fence. It's not about beating ourselves up when we notice we're off in la la land someplace, down some road, mistaken in my identity, believing in my thoughts, shaming myself or someone else, blaming someone else or myself, being loveless. And a zillion ways in which we may be distracted from our truth. And we're being asked to let go of that misidentification when you notice that. Let it go. And we're being asked to receive the new self that is always present. Always present. Has never left, never gone anywhere, never reappeared, has always been. That is the isness that the allness of isness that we are simply asked to rest in as truth. So, contrary to the ego's many written opinions about it, we find we must let go and stop acting the misidentification entirely before we can consciously know, be, and act the one I am. And that is all connected. One I am. Capital O-N-E dash I dash am. We find we must let go Stop acting the misidentification entirely. And you know, for some reason that the term holy instant came to mind, because if our direct experience is mostly misidentified with the small self, we can and do experience holy instants or longer instances or time frames or seeming minutes, hours, seconds, or, you know, whatever your experience might be, where we do in fact recognize consciously, we know viscerally this one I am. And it comes in acceptance of the truth, resting in that truth, no longer saying, you know, that truth is, I don't know, maybe something I'll be 2 weeks from now, or, you know, when I can act holier in the world, or, you know, when I don't react this way to my husband, or when I can, you know, really love an insult disguised as disguised as a joke, or when, you know, that's how the ego works. It always will have a condition attached. Always will have a condition attached to the awareness, the pure awareness, which is the truth, the isness of the one I am, without any sort of, you know, heaped on fact upon fact of who I am here in the world, in this relative, you know, small world that I seem to occupy. There won't be any of that going on, those additions in the one I am. There's just that nothingness, nothing added. And the ego will have an opinion about that too, because it's going to add something to that. You know, like, what is she talking about? It wants to misidentify every pure, pureness. It wants to distort pureness into some sort of sullied pureness and try to understand it with intellect, thereby misidentifying what isness actually is. Yeah, how weird is that? And then write opinions about it. Yeah. And this, you know, uses the word before twice. Before we can consciously know. You know, not this consciousness that, you know, I seem to have some sort of murky identification with this consciousness that, for instance, can be conscious. Oh, I see my time's coming up quickly. Conscious of objective and an object consciousness, not that consciousness. The consciousness that is conscious of consciousness before, and even before that concept as the absolute, but even the words speaking of absolute mean nothing. So again, I will stop there with that. With that. Okay, guys, thank you for joining me. I am ending on page 22. Yes. In what seemed to be kind of a, I don't know, what may be one of those muddied sort of explanations. I hope it was clear, though. Yeah. Page 22. Yes. Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to listening to you guys. Giving up the mic.